there. I'm Jody, and welcome to Reality TV. This week, I'm going to be breaking down two of my most favorite shows, 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. But first, we need to talk about what has been going on in, well, I guess it's the not-so-shallow end of the news. I need to talk about the impeachment hearings. Now, hold on. Don't turn me off. I am not going to get political, I promise, because I actually think the impeachment hearings have something for everyone. They can actually bring us together. Now, obviously, if you are listening to me right now, you and I are very similar. I think we can come together no matter your political affiliation, independent, Democrat, Republican, Tea Party, whatever, because the impeachment hearings are the best reality show on TV possibly ever. Think about it. At the very base level, minimal commercials, right? Maybe, what, 1, 2, 3 breaks a day? Plus, there's a built-in after show with commentary from our favorite experts. Now, I personally like to watch a certain channel that maybe has a beautiful woman known as AM Joy. I watch her for my after show during the hearings, but perhaps you watch Fox News, and whoever works at Fox News is giving you your after show. Do you see what I mean? We're all coming together without the help of Andy Cohen. Okay, I'm not his biggest fan. I think he's fine, but he's not who I want for my Real Housewives after show. Now, speaking of Real Housewives, I think everyone in that room for the hearings is the exact same thing as having all the Real Housewives franchises all in one place. We have different states, cities represented, lots of scandals, affairs, backstabbing. Everyone in there is kissing up to a boss, whether it be 45, Pelosi, McConnell. It's the same thing that the Housewives do for Andy, right? I mean, I just cannot get enough of it. I think we have 3 days coming up. And not only am I interested in the people testifying for these hearings, but I love looking at who is in the background. I like seeing the staffers behind all of the people on the panel. And I also love the people in the background behind whoever it is that's testifying. So, for example, Yovanovitch, I couldn't keep my eyes off the guy in the background. So it would have been over her left shoulder looking on the right. I'm telling you, Ken Kratz was there watching everything go down. I mean, it wasn't really Ken Kratz, but he was Kratz adjacent, very Kratzy. I mean, I was just waiting for any moment for him to jump in there and start talking in his high-pitched voice, saying how Brendan Dassey should be, I don't know, who knows, on death row at this point. Forget the whole hearing thing. Can we agree that we all need to come together and get Brendan Dassey out of prison? All right, now what else was I busy with this week? Oh my God, insurance. If any of you work for an insurance company, Aetna, can you hit me up? Because I have been on the phone and reading through papers. Our insurance is going to be changing its coverage, of course. And all but one of our prescriptions is not going to be covered. I mean, if I'm not going to need some alcohol treatment, I'm definitely going to need a blood pressure medication that's probably not going to be covered. So that aside, I really needed to check out this weekend, and I checked into some documentaries, two of them in particular. Now, one of them is on Disney Plus, which I don't know if we subscribed to it, downloaded it. However the hell it ended up on my TV. Of course, I went in there and the first thing I searched was, are there documentaries? And there are. Now, there's not a whole lot of them. Solo is on there. That's a really good one. And I'm not talking about Han Solo. I think that's the name of the documentary, the rock climbing dude. That was a really good one. But there is a documentary on there called Science Fair. Now, hear me out. If you are into documentaries and you probably need a really good cry, watch this documentary. It's not necessarily sad. It's a little upsetting, but it's just so, so good. It's about these high school students who are brilliant, and they are going to the International Science and Engineering Fair. I think that's the name of it. And as a former first place Illinois State Science Fair winner, proud 1993 alum, I could really relate to these kids. Yeah, right. I mean, these kids are honest to God, going to be the next Einsteins. You meet all these kids from all over the world. There's these kids from Brazil that I was bawling from the first freaking second because they have like dirt floor schools at one point. And then it shows how they're trying to find this cure for Zika. There is, oh my gosh. Okay. I am the biggest fan of this one girl. Her name is Kashfia. I should say young woman. Brilliant. She's amazing. She's from South Dakota, and fuck the South Dakota high school. I'm not going to say too much, but go and watch it. You will be enraged. And if you are a creeper like me, you will try to find Kashfia's Twitter and Instagram pages, and you may ask to follow her, and you may be denied because you are a middle-aged woman in the Midwest who doesn't know her and is coming across like a total stalker. But listen, I'm her biggest fan, and I am going to be following Kashfia's future endeavors because this girl is amazing. There is also a former winner who's kind of our narrator at some points. I'm just going to say he's a character, and I also think he might be Madeline McCann. Hear me out. Look in his eyes and tell me that is not Madeline. I think I found her. There's also a kid who looks exactly like Logan Paul. And there's also a girl on there. I know I shouldn't be talking about children, but I'm an asshole and I'm going to. She's 14 in this documentary. Brilliant. She's going to do great things, but she's a little cocky. Little too big for her circuit breaker. All right. Now, I also dug into another documentary. I'm on episode 2 right now. This one is on Netflix and it's called The Devil Next Door. It is really deep. It's about this guy who is supposedly Ivan the Terrible, this Nazi war criminal, but they found him and they're putting him on trial. And this is back in, I believe, the 70s or 80s. Really, you gotta be prepared for it, all right? You're gonna be crying. There's definitely some witness testimony that will gut every inch of your soul. It's hard to watch, but it's pretty damn good. And I'm going to apologize right now. There is a truck outside my house that's been idling there. If you hear some background buzz, I apologize. I may need to go out there and kick some ass. And by kick some ass, I mean do freaking nothing because I'm a huge wuss. I'll probably just end up waving to him from the front window and say, "Hello, good sir. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for visiting." You know who I do want to thank, though? My newest Patreon subscribers. Aaron and Kristen, I love ya, and you have a pretty damn good bonus episode coming up this week. I'm going to be talking with my girl Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. We're going to be recapping the Unexpected Tell-Alls, which I meant to get to last week, but there was a whole recording thing with my mom. We are also going to be talking about this murder case that Amanda told me about. I had not heard about it before, the yogurt shop murders. I just started listening to a couple different podcasts and researching. It took place somewhere in Texas. So if you're interested in that, head on over to patreon.com/realitybpod. And there is something for everyone, starting from $1 a month up to, oh, whatever your greatest heart's content is. Also, check out Total Request Podcast this week, again with Amanda. We're going to be recapping a show called Lost in Transition. It looks pretty damn good from the previews. All right, let's jump right into Love After Lockup, and we'll save 90 Day Fiancé for last because, oh my God, I was up late last night on Sunday watching this show. I almost went back and rewatched certain parts of it because it was just that good. But first, let's get into Love After Lockup. You guys know we only have one more week of it. Next week is the finale. I know, what? I mean, are we ever going to find out what happened to Andrea and LaMondre? Is there going to be a tell-all or a reunion? These are the answers we need to know. But let's get into this week's episode. So let's start out with Angela and Tony. Lying through his teeth, and it doesn't even matter because Angela took him back, and now she wants to take him to her bedroom. I can still smell Angela's breath through the screen and through my scent memory. Shout out to Audge and Jer, always more. Angela's breath, you know, it just smells like a very thick, musty, viscous cloud of nicotine and stale Folgers crystals. Oh, take her to the bedroom, Tony. How about taking her to the fucking car wash? Because you're going to need a power hose to get that shit out of her pores. Gross. Now, later, I think Tony was really just sex hungover and his eyes were just focused on that motorcycle because he goes into the office kitchen and it is filled with Angela's fumes and cigarette fumes. And he snapped to immediately. Tony does not like being a kept man. And now he wants to be seen as, you know, like the macho man. He's the man in the relationship. And he doesn't like Angela reminding him of her sacrifices because, you know, he sacrificed too, you guys. He transferred prisons for her. And that's a lot for a guy to take on, right? He's got to learn all the new rules. He's got to learn the new pod. He's got to change prison uniforms. I mean, what if he was wearing stripes and now he's in orange? He doesn't seem like an autumn. He seems more like a summer color scheme. Do you guys remember that? Millennials, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but many of you do. There used to be a thing where there would be consultants and they would bring color swatches. I think my mom got matched. I think she was a fall. She had lots of autumnal scarves that she was in this phase where everything was put a scarf around it. Oh, this sweater, put a scarf with it. Jody, you're in sixth grade and you're wearing a blazer. Wear a scarf with it so you can look like you're 38 working girl style. Anyhow, back to Tony. Right. Now, I thought it was very interesting, Tony's sudden shift, right? Because he's all about thanking Angela. He couldn't live without her. But after he saw that motorcycle and they had the meeting in the office kitchen, he was all about, I'm going to leave if you keep doing this. Funny how he didn't threaten to leave until he had a very fast, shiny new form of transportation. TikTok, Ange, I would take those keys to that motorcycle if I were you. All right, Vincent and Amber, what the hell is going on? Amber's family is not what I expected at all. I mean, I've always known that Amber was a complete asshole, but now she's got no excuse why she's such an asshole. Her family was so sweet, normal, incredibly supportive, like Clint family level of supportive. So why is she plotting to fleece Vincent when she's got the opportunity to make a legitimate life for herself? Her family is just pouring their heart out saying, whatever you need, move back here. So Amber, I mean, I think you got the entire nation's middle finger stuck up your ass right now because she is the worst next to Lacey, who we'll get to last. Now, Cheryl and Josh, I feel like we haven't seen them in a while, but they're back. And Cheryl's sister, Lacey, arrives to a very warm welcome, by the way. Hey, brace face. Fuck you, bonus tooth. What the hell? I mean, it's one thing if you joke around like that with your siblings in normal life, but you got a camera crew filming you, and your sister works in a max security prison. Way to make her personal life and feelings and professional life now a living hell. Fucking Cheryl. Now, then we go to this lunch where, you know, Lacey might be able to loosen up and enjoy herself, but no, they go to this place called The Hangar where I am pretty sure, like 92% sure, I saw bras hanging over the bar. Now, I can see if you are at like Andalay's or something. I know it's a thing and it's a party place. Leave your bra here, which I will never understand because bras are expensive, right, ladies? I mean, why are you going to leave your 50-some dollar Victoria's Secret bra if you are lucky enough to have your boobs be able to fit in a Victoria's Secret bra hanging above a bar? No, no, no. I am keeping my $64 18-hour bra securely in place with the five snaps in the back. You are not getting my bra. Anyhow, I'm not going to eat at a place where some random chick's bra is hanging over my head because it's got her dead skin cells, probably some dry deodorant flakes flaking right off of it into my food and beverage. No, I think we need to get the Arizona, Utah, Idaho, wherever the hell they are, where's their local inspectors? Because they need to check that shit out. I'm telling you, it would not pass code. Now let's get to Josh arriving. This is really a heartwarming scene because Cheryl introduces the two in such a nice, welcoming, very familial way. That's my sister. I'm telling you right now, if I were to have flown hundreds or thousands of miles to go see my sister and meet my future brother-in-law, and my sister just said, "That's my sister," I would immediately call my mom and bitch about it and then want my mom to yell at her because that's such bullshit. You are the mutual person. I think I've talked about this before. I hate when you have the middle person, the mutual person, and you have two new people meeting. And instead of facilitating the conversation, they just sit there and are like, "Okay, you two talk." What the hell, Cheryl? That's your job. Especially because she knows Lacey is there to ask Josh the tough questions. She knows Lacey is skeptical of him. So try to be that person that's bringing them together. But instead, what does Cheryl do? She sits there and she acts totally surprised when Lacey starts asking these questions, like Lacey's being some crazy nosy bitch. Maybe I'm reading this situation wrong, but I don't think she was being anything really but a good sister. I mean, Josh is a bank robber, you guys. More than once, a sister is going to have those kind of questions. But what does Cheryl do? She starts screaming and yelling, and she's making herself look worse than she ever has. Thank God for Lacey at this point, because it seems like she's the only one looking out for Cheryl's kids. Cheryl's just too dumb or something to see that her family is looking out for her best interest. Now let's talk about Lizzie and Daniel. You guys, I kind of miss the Eiffel Tower. I really do. But guess what? Alert to Paris. Any of you listening from France, you're all covered in lava because Daniel and Lizzie have destroyed Paris. What kind of disgusting monsters trash a national monument? I mean, sure, it's the hotel room variety, but very easy to confuse when the resemblance is so striking. I mean, the views, you think you were there. Now, all joking aside, even if you are the messy type, okay, I understand I'm super OCD, but if you are the type that's leaving your towels and all that shit around, all right. But I ask you this, if a camera crew were following you around, coming to your room, in your Eiffel Tower, to film you, wouldn't you pick up your nasty ass clothes off the ground and then to tell us how much sex you had and that your knees were bruised? We get it. You have sex. You're so cool. She is way too old to be bragging about her sex life. This is shit the girls on Unexpected, who are like 15 and 16, do. I've not been this grossed out since like probably Tamara and Eddie on Real Housewives of Orange County, tied with, now that I say that, remember several seasons ago on Real Housewives of New York when Ramona gave Mario that chest massage? Oh, it's that level of cringe and awkwardness. But something about Lizzie gives me anger, too. I know, so weird that I get angry over the smallest things, right? Anyway, the happily sex couple makes their way to, strangely enough, Stephen Avery's property. I'm very big on making a murder this week. I got murder on the brain. Maybe I should call up Kathleen Zellner, see if she needs an extra hand. She really is just down the road from me, like 10 minutes max down the road. Anyhow, so they're at Avery's tow yard where Daniel's mom is graveling the backyard. Is this a thing? Wherever they live? Let's talk about where they live. All I see is just gray and smokestacks, lots of Carhartt wearing people. It's very depressing where they live. I mean, I would probably want to marry Daniel and get showered under the Eiffel Tower too if I lived there. But long, boring story short, because these two are way too boring to be on the show at this point, Daniel can't keep a secret, so he tells his mom and his family that he proposed to Lizzie. Now, I ask you, is there really that much of a difference between a promise ring and an engagement ring at this point? I mean, there's a difference for Daniel because if he were to say it's a promise ring, that's just a night full of arguing and really deep talks about where you stand in our relationship. And if you say it's an engagement ring, you know, there's bruised knees and whipped cream. So I guess I get that point. But if you're telling someone, "I'm giving her a promise ring" or "I'm proposing," what's the difference? It just means you're getting married at some future time. Maybe it's a timeline thing. whatever. Oh my God, I'm already giving this way more thought than really either of these two are giving to marriage. Now, Glorietta and Alex. All right, now we're picking up the episode, right? Turns out Cato and Dawn, much like Daniel's family, also lives on the Avery's tow yard property. Small world. Now, Alex crashed there last night to think things through, aka how to gaslight Glorietta into thinking it's her fault he wants to dump her for his ex, Juliana. So he makes his way to some very poorly attended indoor vintage car expo where Glorietta is a model, a marketer, a LipSense multi-level marketing team member. I'm going to need someone to help me figure out what her end goal of being at that place was. But anyway, Alex shows up and, well, hold on a second, back to this lipstick thing. Alex says, "You're wearing a lot of lipstick." No, I said, "You're wearing a lot of lipstick." And when a dude points out the fact that you're wearing that much lipstick, not once, but twice, there's an issue. I'm trying to think within my own marriage, I don't think I've ever had Dave say, "You're wearing too much of this or that." And maybe every once in a while, I don't know, someone puts on a little bit too much makeup, I can see pointing it out, but ugh, that was not a good start to just lead with, "Whoa, that's a lot of lipstick." But anyhow, he's there to quiz Glorietta on why she's in love with him. And although he may have some good points because she's got no reasons because she's an idiot, he's an asshole and he's just been using her this whole time. And now he's going to turn it around on her and she's going to end up being even a bigger fool than she already is. Now, Lacey, Shane, and John, you guys, I've been dying to talk about this since the second I turned this episode off. So we're just going to go full porn ahead, sorry, full speed ahead, and we're going to talk about wedding planning. Now, first stop, me knocking this fucking truck out that's still idling outside my house, we're going to go cake tasting with Chris Farley's lunch lady character. If you are younger than I am, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm telling you, this woman is a Chris Farley doppelganger. God bless her heart. I'm not trying to be mean, but the way the lunch lady hat, the netting was settling on her bob, it was perfect. All right, so Lacey is surprised that Shane's getting into wedding planning, but it's not wedding planning, stupid Lacey. He's into cake because he's a child. Shane is like any second grader or me, to be honest, when you bring him into a bakery and tell him it's all you can eat cake. Try any cake you want. Plus, Shane wasn't so much into that cake design as he was just naming what he saw in the picture. "I see starfish. I see waves. There's like sand, maybe a seahorse or something. The almond one is like kind of sweet." He said almond. This isn't a sherbet debate. This is not a caramel debate. It's almond. We can all agree it's almond, not almond. And Lacey, don't get too excited about him looking at the cake. It was basically an I Spy poster for Shane. Where's Waldo? Where's the starfish? It's like in the sand. He's such a dumbass. And his stupid pubic hair all over his face. It's a texture problem. He needs a deep condition, just everything from probably the knees up. Now, what do you know about Lacey, besides her being a complete sociopath? She's going to see John again. Who would have thought? She's flirting with him, of course, and she knows it's going to piss Shane off, and that's why she gets off on having multiple guys in her life at the same time. Lacey is so selfish that it doesn't even matter to her that John has feelings. I mean, Sean has feelings. Shane has feelings. Even her kid's paternity is on the line, but she doesn't fucking care. She is a monster. But she also has kind of good taste because for some reason, I'm finding John kind of sexy. Not Shane in any way, shape, or form. And I understand that John is, you know, a former felon and possession of firearms. And he's probably a horrible, morally corrupt person. But this is where Lacey has led us to. Yeah, I'm grouping you in with me. We all, it's going to make me feel better if I say that. We all think John is sexy and it's all Lacey's fault. it's her fault that we find him attractive because we're looking at him in comparison to everything going on with this threesome scenario. She's going to sleep with him again. Shane will find out, but since Shane has nothing going for him except an ever-evolving, piercing situation on his face, they're here, they're there, they're left, they're right, up, down, inside, out, and a horrible pubic hair situation that grows out of every orifice of his body. We got John here looking like the perfect man. I mean, right up there with Obama. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I am so sorry. Father, son, holy Oprah. I apologize for that. All right, I don't even know what I was talking about because this is what Lacey does. She fires people up and then we all, I'm grouping you in with me, we all go crazy. All right, before I go too much more nuts, I'm going to take a very quick break, have a word from my sponsor this week, and then I'll be back with 90 Day Fiancé. All right, first things first, let's talk about Anna and Marcel. What are we going to do about these two? I thought they were going to be the couple that was going to bring it. And this episode, they were nothing but a total snooze fest. This week, instead of talking about hiding Anna's kids over nachos, we watched them talk about hiding her kids over a picnic table with a lazy Susan. I mean, it's not that I am wishing bad things on Anna or Marcel. Well, more so Anna and her adorable kids. But my God, I don't want an entire season of them just handing a phone back and forth. We cannot afford to have another Paul and Carini. I can't do it. And I saw, because I'm starting to get into pillow talk, I saw that they had Russ and Pow on last night. I don't think I can bring myself to watch it. I don't have enough strength in me to fast forward and then rewind if I accidentally fast forward too much, but I cannot watch the two of them. They're not funny, they're not engaging or charming, and I cannot stand looking at Paula if she's got blonde hair. She does too ashy, it doesn't match up. No, get them off the fucking show, TLC. All right, back to the real juicy parts of the show. Let's talk about Michael and Juliana. Now, Michael's attorney, I gotta get this out of the way. If you are sensitive to anything about little people, just jump ahead about 30 seconds. I'm not saying anything's wrong with anyone who is a little person. I love them. You know, I love some little people, big world. However, okay, jump ahead 30 seconds. You guys know that I have an MD in diagnosing people who carry the little person gene, and Michael's attorney is a carrier. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Her offspring have precisely a 50-50 chance of being a little person. Grandchildren, 25%, unless they also conceive with another carrier, all right? It's science. I don't want to get too wrapped up in genetics. I'm going to save that for my TED Talk. I'm just throwing that out there. All right, let's resume. Juliana's visa got approved, so now she's on her way to Greenwich, Connecticut. Michael, Mr. Moneybags, got a Hummer limo, which immediately reminded me of a real throwback reality show, Go on a Journey with Me. If you are a child of the 80s, 90s, you'll remember a show called MTV True Life. I'm talking season one, I'm Getting Married. There was a groom who was from the Jersey Shore, and he had on a white tuxedo with tails, sunglasses, pre-Pauly D, but he had the hair, okay? He was on the phone with a limo driver who was running late, and he was screaming, "I'm gonna gut you like the fish that you are. You don't know who you're talking to," and he lost his goddamn mind. Well, that's what the white Hummer reminded me of. So Michael, much like this guy, thought he was very high class. He's got to make sure that Juliana is impressed when he picks her up from the airport. And let me clarify what being impressed means. He thinks Juliana is gonna love this Hummer so much, she's going to want to make a porno in the back. What a nice guy. Super high class, one percenter, wine importer, exporter. Way to shoot down those prostitute yacht girl rumors, you fool. Now, it is a damn miracle, aka Michael's ex-wife, that Michael's kids turned out to be such sweethearts because they're adorable. I love them. How they have a dad who is talking about making a porno with a person that's closer in age to them than they are to him. Who the fuck knows? But those kids are funny. They're sweet, super welcoming. And Juliana, you guys, I like her. She was a pro with those two, way better than we've seen a lot of these fiancés be with anyone's children. It was just lovely. It was a sweet scene, and I wasn't prepared for it. I was ready to be all snarky, but it was a lovely, wholesome, sweet scene. And maybe I would have cried if I hadn't bawled my fucking eyes out during that science fair documentary. Moving on to Tanya and Sinjin. They are still in New York City with her hashtag girl squad, and we find out why that is. Tanya says she needs her friends around. She needs them now, she needs them in the future, and no matter what, her friends will always come first, says someone who isn't married nor has kids. She's stupid. And don't get me wrong, I have friends I would do anything for, but my kids and my husband are always going to come first. I'm thinking Sinjin should maybe pull a Paul, cut off some of his armpit hair, and give it to Tanya to play with, and then she'll come to her senses because she fucking loves his armpit hair. Yeah, did you hear that part? This fucking psycho, this go-getter, this OCD wonder of a woman likes to play with Sinjin's armpit hair. Let me guess, she likes to braid his pubes too? That's fucking disgusting, you guys. I have been with Dave since, okay, not married, but I've been with him since 2002. And I can honestly tell you, I have never, ever touched or went to grab his armpit hair. Maybe, I mean, not even that I can recall, but I'll just throw this out there. Maybe there might have been like an accidental arm around my shoulder, you know, picture by the pool or something like that. But armpit hair to me is basically pubic hair that's just become acceptable for men to wear. I'm not going to be touching it. I don't get it. I don't know what solution there is except for men to shave it, but would that be weird? I don't know. But certainly, I don't think it is normal to be playing with it. I mean, popping each other's pimples is more acceptable to me than this. And that's a lot coming from me, who would rather pay someone to pop Dave's pimples than me getting in there. I couldn't. It would be impossible because every time I would look at him for the rest of my life, all I would think of is pus. All right, sorry, not sorry. That's just the way the world turns. What the hell was I talking about? Who was I even talking about? Oh, right. Okay, these two. Oh, what do I have written down? Sushi. Oh, right. They go on this double date with the friends again over sushi, and they start talking about kids. Tanya wants two kids, and Sinjin wants probably none. Great. I mean, super compatible. Not something at all they should have discussed previous to thousands of dollars, a visa, a TV show contract, and a camera crew following you around. Yeah. Now then the discussion continues over dinner where they order steak and Tanya neglects to wear a bra again. She also neglects to take Sinjin's opinion on how he wants to live his life. So that's great. Things are looking up. It's a smashing first day in New York City. Only thing that could have made that dinner more awkward and probably better to watch would be to have Darcy and Jesse show up. That's all I kept thinking about. Like, what if Darcy just busted out of that bathroom in a fur coat and Jesse came strolling in? A foursome, a double date with those two would be amazing. Because you know what I bet would happen? Tanya and Jesse would just, they would hit it off at first, actually, and then it would go to blows. And Sinjin and Darcy probably get wasted. Darcy would fall in love with them, and then Sinjin would just leave her like a one-night stand. All right, that's my fantasy, and I'm sticking to it. All right, moving on. Oh, our new couple, Mike and Natalie. Mike is from Squim, which sounded like Squim, but there's an E in there. Squim, Washington, which makes me wonder, do you think he knows Corey from Millay, Washington? I think I smell a spinoff. Or not, because it would actually be probably pretty boring. They would just stand there and look at tall trees or some shit. All right, so let's learn about Mike. He is 6'7". He's an extrovert. He's very loud. He's proud of his height, and he's proud of his family because he bought their tree farm. This tree farm has a very interesting character who lives on the land. His name is Uncle Bojangles. The second Mike screamed Bojangles, I immediately remembered a nightmare that I have had for years. And this is not a joke. It's probably gone on decades at this point. There is either a song or a movie, like Mr. Bojangles, right? There's like a jazzy tap dancer guy that goes, Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles. And we watched this video in music class when I was in elementary or middle school. And I'm not even kidding you. It has haunted my nightmares. I have an image of a ginger-haired, freckle-faced young boy who comes into my dreams and he does like the slow motion Mr. Bojangles move. And then he looks at me and then he runs off really fast. I know this sounds crazy, and it is crazy because it's a scary fucking nightmare. And the guy's name is Bojangles in my nightmare. So when he screamed Bojangles, chills went over my entire body. And I felt like, oh my God, this is the moment. This is the moment where this red-haired, freckle-faced kid is going to run out of the barn and I'm going to fucking die and realize that I've been living in a horror movie for my entire life. Deep breath. Okay, now, thankfully, it was not a freckled-faced young boy. It was a toothless older gentleman who has very long locks who he could probably donate, probably get some extra money there, maybe buy an acre of the tree farm. Now let's meet Natalie. Forget Bojangles, because now it's just going to come all back to me, and I guess I'll be seeing Reddit in the middle of the night when I can't sleep. Natalie was a friend of Mike's friend's wife, and they met because they're mutual godparents to this couple's baby. One trip to the Ukraine later, and Mike fell head over heels in love with Natalie, and they got engaged under the actual Eiffel Tower. Not the same one Lizzie and Daniel showered under. That would have just been like the crossover of a century, but no, it was the actual Eiffel Tower. Now, there's always a plot twist, so here we go. Natalie wants babies immediately, but Mike doesn't want them because he hasn't disclosed his extensive credit card debt yet. Dun, dun, dun. Or should I say timber? Get it? Tree farm humor. Well, there's another kink in the plan because Natalie's visa has been delayed. All right, not going to get political, but wondering if it has something to do with, you know, relations with the Ukraine. So she tells Mike that she wants him to come to the Ukraine, love, because she misses him. And since Mike's beanstalk is all kinds of horny, he's going to go max out his already probably maxed out debt-ridden accounts to fly to see Natalie. Now, I'm wondering if Natalie wants him to fly out there because she's probably spent all the money that he sent her. And the only way that she's going to get more money from him is if he goes there, she'll be like, can you leave me hundreds of dollars, love? And he'll do it. That's the way this shit always goes down. Now, while we're out in the Ukraine, why don't we stop by Russia and see what's going on with Emily and Sasha? Because I've had four children and I was devastated watching this labor and birth. That was beyond intense. And that hospital looked like the medieval times torture exhibit if you've ever gone to see that shit. I know I'm a spoiled American. I'm going to fess up to it right now. I have no problem, no shame saying, when I walk into my birthing suite, God, I'm such an asshole. When I walk into my birthing room, my birthing suite, whatever you want to call it, I want crisp white sheets. I want a heated blanket. I want a room service menu in my hand as soon as that baby gets the all clear and I hear it crying. Emily, on the other hand, she's got some sort of stamina that I have no knowledge of. She was a trooper. Now, Sasha, I think he was fine. I'm not going to give him a round of applause just because he was there and he was average. He doesn't remember where the fuck he was when his other kids were born. But they named the baby Dave. And no offense to Daves. You guys know I'm married to a Dave, but I've never seen anyone hold their newborn child minutes old, seconds old, and say, this is Dave. David, I can see, but Dave? It was very jarring. Also jarring, the lack of precautions that the medical personnel seemed to take. They had on some sort of cinched gauzing that they wrapped around. At first, I thought maybe it was like an ACE bandage, but what I really think it was, and this is not even joking around, ladies, if you've ever given birth, you know those hospital underwear that they give you, those meshy things? That's what I think the doctor had wrapped around his head. And as many of you medical personnel pointed out, doctors, nurses, you're supposed to cover your nose and your mouth in the surgery room, and this guy just like, I don't know, he had like a little over his lip, and he's like, I don't feel like putting it over my nose today. And the fingers and the hand washing, they like picked up a piece of gauze and just rubbed it on their hands. And then after they washed them, they're like clapping them together. They're doing high fives and secret handshakes and shit. And then they're like, oh, slice her open, stick our hands in there. I mean, it's a damn miracle that women in Russia are having babies, that people are even having sex in Russia. If they were to see this hospital in those conditions and that's how the birth goes down, hell no. I can tell you one thing for sure. Sasha certainly wouldn't have had a second or a third child if he had to be in there the first time that his wife had a baby. Oh, all right. Let's move on to Robert and Annie. Well, turns out Annie is a huge bitch. To me, it's not even about the used clothes, because that was a major dick move on Robert's part, because he offered to buy her a whole new wardrobe, told her to sell her clothes in the Dominican. He should have given her a heads up. All right. I agree with that. But my issue is Annie was just fucking rude about it and in front of the employee. Maybe explain why you're not into it. Peruse the clothes. Just pretend. Say nothing fits. I get it. I personally cannot do resale clothing because of my OCD. If you enjoy getting your clothes from a resale shop, you may not want to listen to my reasonings why. And if you are on the fence about it, you may want to listen because I have 100% valid points. I don't like the concept of my crotch rubbing against a foreign unknown crotch. I don't know if the woman before me farted in it. I don't know if she got her period or something else in it. Yeah, I'm going there, okay? I know it's graphic, but this is the reality. What if I bought a pair of pants from a resale shop and I end up finding out, or I never find out, that the woman who was wearing it before me had her water break in it? She had a crazy night at the bar and oopsies, the hems of her jeans touched the bathroom floor because she forgot to pull up her hems. And yeah, I do that every time I'm unfortunately forced to use a public toilet. You pull up your hems, you hover, and then you pray to God your quads and God himself gives you strength and stamina to make it through your pee session. And this is why I need my anti-anxiety meds that my insurance isn't going to cover. All right, let's go to this dinner, and then I promise I will rip Robert a new asshole because he's not completely innocent in this either. But I just wanted to say I understand why Annie may not want to shop at a resale shop. Now, at this dinner, Annie orders wine and doesn't drink it. She orders a meal and she doesn't eat it. I think that's fucking bullshit. I liked how Robert pointed out what he didn't like. Now, I'm not saying he really was justified in it. I guess what I'm saying is I like that he is speaking what he's feeling instead of keeping it inside and bottling it up, because that's really how the Colty and Larissa shit got to where it was. Colty wouldn't say anything, then it would build up, and then it would explode. I don't think that's good. I don't necessarily think what Robert and Annie are doing is good either, but I like that he spoke up for how he was feeling in the moment. I do not like Annie's little pouty shit. That's just not my style. That pisses me off. But Robert, you cannot promise someone that they're going to get a new phone and they're going to get a car and they're going to have designer clothes. And TLC tweeted something on Twitter during the show saying that Robert told Annie to sell all her clothes and that he was going to buy her a brand new wardrobe. Now, sure, a brand new wardrobe might be from the resale shop, but what would any normal person think? Oh, we're going to go to the mall, or we're going to go to wherever online and I'm going to get a new wardrobe. So that was pretty shitty. If he promised her all these things, this certain type of lifestyle, and then he assumed when she got here, she was just suddenly going to change because she loved him, that's bullshit, and he should not have done that to her. She should also not be expecting everything right away. Maybe compromise, maybe come to a place in the middle. But I think these two, it's going to come to a screeching halt. It's going to be a Colty Larissa situation, probably within a matter of months. And that's pretty damn sad because there's a kid involved. I hope I'm wrong, but I mean, my God, these two do not seem compatible at all. Well, that does it for this week's episode. Next week, I'll be off for Thanksgiving, but I'll be back in 2 weeks. Don't you worry. We'll have lots of Love After Lockup finale things to talk about. And of course, 90 Day Fiancé. I hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving. If you're looking for something to listen to, remember, check out patreon.com/realitytvpod Check out Total Request Podcast. That's at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. Hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. I'll talk to you soon. Stay salty.